These people sitting here haven't made the change called death. S. No, of course not. Tom, I have made the change called death, and I am controlling the young man. You saw me when I left him? S. Yes. Tom, these people sitting here couldn't see me, but you can see me. Now just think for a moment, what is the reason that you can see me and they cannot? S. I really don't know how you present it to my sight, and not to them. Tom, supposing you would go out in the world and tell people that you saw a spirit, and that spirit talked to you, what would people say to you? S. They would hardly believe such a story. There are a great many who believe in the supernatural, and there are a great many who do not. Tom, but your friends know you to be an honest, upright man, and isn't it very strange that they wouldn't believe you if you should tell them your experience, when they will believe such incredible things, nonsensical things, impossible things that are written in that book which they have been taught to believe in as the Word of God? That isn't just, is it? But people don't think for themselves. It is more as they were equals brought up and taught. The manners and customs in each country are different. They all have a religion according to their mind development. There are many bright minds who are not satisfied to accept that book, because they think and reason and they find things in that book that cannot be true, because they are contrary to nature's laws. George, do you realize where you are at the present time? S. Yes, I am in Parsons Shoe Store. Tom, in what place? S. In Cincinnati. What makes you ask such questions? Tom, you are not in Cincinnati now, my friend. And you are not in a shoe store. S. Where am I? Tom, you are in Buffalo, N.Y.S. I don't understand it at all. Tom, no, you cannot. Would you feel sorry if you had left your old body, if you had made the change called death? S. I don't know. Tom, well, you have. S. Is that true? Tom, that is true, my friend. S. How did it happen? Tom, when you were in that shoe store trying on a pair of shoes, you had a stroke, and you died without regaining consciousness. You left your body almost immediately. At the present time, kind spirit friends have clothed your spirit body with material which enables you to speak as you are speaking now. And when you came back and expressed yourself on the earth plane, you took on your last thought, which was trying on a pair of shoes. S. It is most mysterious. I can't seem to realize it. Tom, no, because it is so natural. You are George just the same. George left the body. You retain your individuality. You are just the same as you were when you were in the body. There is a great band of loving spirits, you would call them angels, they are so bright, whose mission it is to aid and assist spirits like yourself, who have made the change not knowing it, and you were brought here to this place tonight to be made acquainted with the fact. You will be taken in charge by kind, loving spirit friends, who will teach you about the duties pertaining to the life you have now entered. S. I am glad to know that the spirits of my friends are interested, and will help me. Tom, you have entered a life now of progression. It is a wonderful life, and you will see your friends. Many spirit friends who will aid and assist you are those who never knew you in earth life. And I want to tell you, my friend, all are saved, and in time all are happy. No matter what you believe, that doesn't save you. It is what you do. If you live unselfish lives and try to help others all you can, you send the good on before you, and you have a great deal stored up in nature's storehouse for you when you come to make the change called death. They are bright pictures to light up your pathway. If you lead selfish, wrong lives, you paint dark pictures, for the life you lead while in the body shapes the beginning of the next life. S. Yes, I feel that something different has certainly taken place with me. Tom, we will take you where you can become prepared, each and all of you, and be made acquainted more with your conditions, because now you will be better able to understand me as a spirit through having come in contact with me in this manner than you could have if I had not addressed you as I have at the present time. S. Thank you, I thank you. That must be heavenly music. I only catch a strain now and then. It is from the heavenly band, is it not? Tom, yes, from the upper spheres. It is wafted to you on the wires of love and sympathy. Now look, George. S. I see a great many, a great host. Will we go to them? Tom, yes. Now you bid the kind friends adieu, and we will go. S. Goodbye, friends. We have done a beautiful work tonight. We have helped a great many of the same class of mind as this one. Eva. Thursday evening, July 16, 1891. We have a very strange company this evening, persons of all classes. They are not aware they have made the change. Eva. S. RBD, D. If I won't have that hog. You are a liar. The hog isn't yours. Mr. B. Did you raise him? S. No, but the hog is mine all the same. Mr. B. How does he come to be yours? S. Because I bought him. Mr. B. Did you pay the money for him? S. I don't know as that's any of your business. If I bought him, I bought him. Mr. B. Sometimes people buy things and don't pay for them. S. I don't want any insinuations of that character at all. I bought that hog, and I'll be D. D. If I am not going to have that hog. Mr. B. If he is yours, you ought to have him. S. It's my hog, and he'll find out that two can shoot. Mr. B. Sometimes only one has a chance to shoot. S. He's gone away with it. I'll be even with him, my blood is up. S. Number 2, it seems very strange, no one under the sun will do anything I ask them. Mrs. B., what do you want done? S. I want the carriage and I want the horses at the door, I want to go out. It is very strange how many times I have rung for that carriage. Mrs. B., perhaps the bell is out of order. S. There must be something done. I can't endure this any longer. Tom, what will you do? S. What business is it to you? You please step away, get away from here as soon as possible. Tom, why, no, I am not going to get away. I rather like the looks of you, and I want to talk to you. S. I don't wish anything from you. Tom, well, I do from you. S. What impertinence. Tom, what's the matter with you? You needn't get on your high heels now. S. Leave my house. What business have you here, you vagabond? Tom, I am no vagabond. S. You are an impudent man. Tom, why, no, I am not any more impudent than you are. S. I don't wish anything more from you, sir. Just depart. Tom, I am not a bit afraid of you. It doesn't make any difference if you are rich, you will find you can't take your money with you when you die. It won't do you any good at all. So you had better do what good with it you can now, because if you don't you will be real sorry. S. Such impudence. Tom, my gracious sakes. You are shocked, aren't you? It does people good sometimes to be shocked. You are not any better than anybody else. I wouldn't put on so many airs. S. Who gave you the authority to come and talk to me so? Tom, don't you know what your grandmother did? I do. S. Will you leave this house, sir? Tom, I wouldn't put on so many airs, I would think what my grandmother did. I know what your name is. You want them to call you Blanche, but that isn't your name. S. That's none of your business, sir. Tom, your name is Bridget. S. You get right away from here. Tom, Bill says your name is Bridget. Say, you remember Bill, don't you? S. Hannah. Hannah. Will you come here? Tom, don't you know Bill? I mean your first husband. S. Hannah. Hannah. Tom, oh, you can call Hannah all you want to, she isn't around, she is deaf, like the doorbell. What do you suppose Bill would say if he should see you now? S. Will you leave this house? Tom, I can't, I am enjoying myself too well. S. You are a tramp, that's what you are. Tom, don't you remember Bill? What do you suppose he would say if he could see you now? S. Oh dear. I wish that girl would come. Tom, Bill never used to call you Blanche. S. Will you hold your tongue? Will you cease speaking to me? Tom, no, I have got something very important to tell you. S. Who are you, anyhow? Tom, my name is Dom. S. I am sure no person has given you an entrance here, and what business have you to come here? Tom, I had to come in here to talk to you. S. I wish you would leave the house at once. Tom, say, I know about that box, and if I should leave the house and give it to the papers, what I know about it, what would you think about that? Do you think it would sound well? S. You would be a very foolish man to do such a thing. What nonsense are you talking to me? Tom, I think I am talking sense. Do you remember Bob Jackson? S. I am almost desperate. What do you want? Money? Tom, no, I don't want any money. S. Oh dear. I wish you were dead. Tom, I am dead. Are you afraid of me? Say, shall I tell you your fortune? S. Are you a fortune teller? Tom, why, yes. I think there are some things you wouldn't want told. S. I will give you money to go away and keep yourself quiet. Tom, I don't want any money. S. What do you want? What did you come here for? Tom, I came to help you. S. I don't want any help from the like of you. You don't know whom you are talking to, I am sure you don't. Tom, oh, yes, I do. S. You are just an impudent tramp. Tom, I can tell you all about your past life. S. I have heard a plenty. I don't want to hear any more. Tom, when you lived down in the village with Bill, you didn't live the way you are living now, did you? S. Is that any of your business? Tom, no, only I don't think you ought to assume to be what you are not. You are false through and through. What good does it do you to live the double life that you are living, just for the few years you will live on earth? What do you suppose is going to become of you when you come to die? You can't take any of your grand surroundings with you. You can't take your money with you that you have got now, if you did get it in the manner you did, some of it. I know how you got some of your money, and what good is it? S. Oh, mercy. I can't bear this man. I can't understand why he talks to me in the way he does. Whoever told you all this? You are mistaken in the person. Tom, oh, no, L. I'm not. S. You certainly are. Tom, so you think, but I am not. I know why you comb your hair the way you do, because there's a scar right on the right side of your head that you cover up with your hair, and you wouldn't want anyone to see it. S. I will give you money if you will go out of the country. Tom, how much will you give me? S. What will satisfy you? Tom, well, you couldn't satisfy me that way, because I want to help you. S. I never did you any harm. Tom, oh, no. And I don't want to do you any harm. I wouldn't harm you for anything, because I pity you. I pity anyone that has led the life that you have, and that is leading the life that you are now, for you are living a false life. What good does it do to assume to be what you are not? No one is better than another, you are all God's children. S. How do you know this? Tom, well, I am getting a great deal of it from Bill, your first husband, he says he was. Of course, you may think that is strange. S. I do think it is very strange. I think you are a very strange man. Tom, you think Bill is dead. Well, his body is dead, but he lives all the same, and I am one of those beings. In my present condition I can communicate with spirits. S. I thought you were a strange character. Tom, yes, I can communicate with spirits, and that is why I could tell about you. Would you like to see me? S. I see you, and I wish I had never seen you. Tom, you don't see me. S. Yes, I do, and I am sorry I ever saw you, I wish you had never come into my presence. Tom, you don't see me, because I am a spirit, and I am controlling this young man to talk to you. S. That is horrid. That is awful. That is dreadful. Tom, it is true. Many things that are dreadful are true, and some things that are not true are dreadful. But you don't see me, because I am controlling this young man to talk to you, and I want you to see me. S. I wish you would go away. Tom, what for? S. Because you talk so strangely. Tom, I will be one of the best friends you ever had. You will be more afraid when you find out what has happened to you, and you will want I should help you then, so you had better look at me when the chance is given you. Now I am going to leave the young man, and you look at me, and you will see I am different from the young man. Mrs. B. Oh, yes, look at him, and tell us how he looks. Mr. B. Tom is a beautiful spirit. S. Oh, dear. Oh, my. Oh, that is dreadful. Mr. B. It is nothing to be afraid of. It is beautiful. S. Oh, that is very strange. Mr. B. Doesn't he look beautiful now? Doesn't he look good? He is good. S. Has he gone away forever? Mr. B. No. He will come back again and talk to you, and you will be very glad that he does. Tom, returns to Mr. F. Well, now, did you see me? S. I saw a very strange thing. Tom, you saw a spirit, and that was me. I have died. S. You have died. I don't comprehend or understand you at all. Tom, don't you suppose that when you die you will be a spirit? S. Possibly, but I cannot tell. Tom, what do you think is going to become of you when you die? S. I don't know. Tom, don't you think you had better be thinking about it? S. Possibly I had. Tom, you can't live always, and when you die you can't take your money along with you, so what will you have? Where will you be, and what will you do then? You will have to leave everything behind you when you die. S. I suppose I will have to. Tom, of course you will have to, and how much have you got stored up on the other side for you? How much good have you done in your life? You have only just looked out for yourself every time. S. Oh dear. You startle me so. Tom, why should I startle you? I am sorry for you, and so is your sister Rebecca. S. I never had anyone talk to me that way before. Tom, it is my pleasure as a spirit to help poor souls like you, because you are poor. S. I have thought sometimes I would try and get religion and live a better life. Tom, religion won't do you any good. S. Then why do you talk to me in that way? I thought you wished me to get religion. Tom, no, but I want you to live a more unselfish life, and be kind to those about you. It is my mission to help poor souls like you. There are a great many people who make the change called death and don't know it, and you know it is very bad for you to get angry. You know the last time the doctor saw you he told you you must avoid that, because you know you have that heart trouble. S. I can't help being angry. I have a temper, I know, but I can't help it. Tom, that quarrel you had with James your coachman was very bad for you, and a great many people die and don't know they are dead, isn't that funny? S. Why, yes, that seems strange. Tom, and these people that are dead and don't know it go hunting around, and they give expression to the thoughts that were last in their mind before they made the change called death. You know, just simply dying don't change you at all. You are just the same individual, the spirit only escapes from the physical body. Now you mustn't be frightened when I tell you you have made that change called death, and that is why you couldn't get anyone to pay any attention to you, because they don't know you are there. S. Oh, dear me. Tom, it is true. S. Oh, no, it isn't true. Tom, it is so. Or how could you be talking to me in the way you are, and how could you see me as a spirit? You never saw a spirit before, did you? S. I never saw anything like that before. Tom, if you hadn't moved out of your old body, you couldn't see me that way. S. You are a very strange man. I never saw anyone like you in my life before. Tom, no, of course not, because you never saw anyone in this way before. S. It cannot be. Tom, it is so. S. Oh, number. Tom, hold up your hand now, and you will see something go from it. S. I do. Oh, mercy. I am dropping to pieces. She is dematerialized and rematerialized. S. Oh, I never could imagine that death was like this before. It must be that I have changed some way. Tom, yes, you have, but you weren't aware when you made that change, because you died very suddenly, in anger, and that was bad for you. S. What will I do? Tom, do you want to turn me out now? S. No, don't go. Tom, just look about you now. S. Strange, strange. Tom, yes, you have left everything behind you now. You can't take anything with you. In the life you are in now everything is known, and good deeds count more than wealth. You have no use for money now. You have entered a new life. A life of eternity. S. What will I do? What shall one do? What will become of me? Tom, you will meet much that will be unpleasant to you, for your whole past life will rise up before you like an open book, and each mistake will have to be corrected, and each wrong will have to be atoned for by labor and sincere soul repentance. You will be aided and assisted by many bright spirits, who have passed on and up through the valleys into the heights of wisdom. If you sincerely desire it, it will be extended to you. Follow the instructions that are given you, and you can work out the mistakes of the past. S. I feel terribly. Tom, yes, You are alone, as it were, in a strange country. How many kind acts did you do in your life that you sent on before? They would be a great benefit and help to you now. All the wrong must be met and overcome by labor and repentance, and when I leave the young man you go with me. S. Where? Where? Tom, I will take you where you can be helped, for you cannot wish to remain in this unpleasant condition. I will take you where you will be aided and instructed pertaining to your new life, and how to correct the mistakes of the past. You are being aided now by spirits who have clothed your spirit body with earth conditions, to enable you to speak and converse with me and these friends in the manner you have. S. I don't understand it at all. Tom, no, but you will. S. I am lost, altogether lost. Tom, yes, but you will be able to comprehend it more in time. You cannot understand fully your condition at once, but when I tell you that you have made the change called death, and you are in the spirit life, it is true, and when I tell you that many make that change and are not aware of it, because the life seems so nearly like the one they were in, that is all true. S. Oh dear. When you tell me that, it seems like something shutting down over me. Tom, yes, and now I will leave the young man, and take you and give you in charge of those who will aid you and assist you. Will you go? S. Are they strangers? Tom, yes, but they will assist you. S. I am afraid. Tom, do not be afraid, they assist you with love, kindness, and sympathy, they only wish to help you out of your darkened condition. S. Well, I must, everything else has left me. It has gone away, I am alone, I have no home. Don't go away, sir, don't. Tom, I won't go away, and if I do, I will leave you in charge of those who will care for you kindly. Your sister loves you very dearly, and she would like to have you work and obey all the instructions that are given you, so that you may reach her as soon as possible. S. Tell her to come to me. Tom, she will in time, when you are prepared to go to her. Now I will leave the young man, and we will go. Through these conversations with Tom we are able to draw them into magnetic currents in companies, so we can reach their conditions, and it would be impossible for us to explain how many we reach in this simple manner, Eva. Appendix B. The electric conditions of the atmosphere in the northern United States. I have referred in my book to the electric conditions of the atmosphere on certain days in the northern states of America and in Canada. I believe it is to these conditions that the ability of psychics to bring us so close to the spirit world is due. Bulwer-Lytton was aware of this, and stated it to the Dialectical Committee. The attached letter is from a gentleman residing in New York City. He is not a spiritist. Mr. James Higgins is, I venture to say, mistaken in supposing that he is at all peculiar in this respect. Less than 24 hours before I had the pleasure of making his acquaintance, I met an Italian gentleman who had lived some time in New York. He related to me a similar experience. It will be found, as time goes on, that communication with the next state of consciousness is accomplished with the greatest facility in very dry, calm conditions of the atmosphere, such as are to be found around the Great Lakes of North America and on the borders of the Great Deserts in Africa and Australia. During the 2 months Mrs. Rhett was at Mr. W. D. Stead's house in England, there was a drought. 44 Wall Street, New York, May 9, 1911. Dear Sir, you asked me about my experiences here in New York in receiving electric shocks from contact with metallic objects in a room. Much of my work is done in the library of a law firm on Wall Street in this city. This is a large room, with heavy, soft carpet on the floor, and on three sides the walls are lined with books on metallic shelves. There is also a movable telephone in the room, the stand of which is made of some metal. I have frequent occasion to take books from the shelves and to use the telephone. On a clear day, when there is comparatively little humidity in the atmosphere, I find that I receive a sharp and unpleasant shock if I cross the room and touch one of the shelves in removing or replacing a book, and that I meet with a similar experience in grasping the stand of the telephone. This sort of thing has happened so frequently that on a day such as I have described I am careful not to touch the bookshelves when I use the books, and to wrap a handkerchief around the hand with which I grasp the telephone stand, much to the amusement of my fellow workers. I have known others in the office to receive shocks in the same way, but not such frequent or severe ones as I have had. In fact, I imagine that I am peculiarly susceptible to the electricity in the atmosphere. My further sail today for Naples on the Heretic, of the White Star Line. He expects to be in London in about a month, and hopes that he may have the pleasure of seeing you there. With kindest regards, yours very sincerely, signed, James C. Higgins. Admiral W. Ispenmore, 5, Western Parade, South Sea, Hants, England. Appendix C. Mr. Head Carrington and Fraud. In the body of this book I have alluded to the unworthy methods of anti-spiritists who profess to tell the public how the thing is done, and to account for all the happenings by normal means. I propose here to give a brief account of a concrete instance of the kind. After I had seen Dr. I.K. Funk in March, 1909, when we had a conversation about the phenomena that happen in the presence of the Bang sisters, he paid the expenses of a conjurer, Mr. Head Carrington, to visit Chicago, requesting him to see the Bang sisters and report to him the phenomena that he obtained in their presence. Dr. Funk had investigated these mediums several times himself. As will be seen below, he had formed a high opinion of their genuine mediumship. In writing to the mediums to make the appointment, he gave no name, and he supposed that Mr. Carrington would sit incognito. Mr. Carrington did go to Chicago and other places about his own business, and eventually sent in a report to Dr. Funk of a negative character. It was put on one side, as of no value. I believe that Mr. Carrington was unaware that I had investigated the Bangs sisters in January and March, 1909, and, until my report of 1911 was published in Light, he was ignorant that I had paid a second series of visits in January of this year, see pages 331 to 346 of this book. I have never met Mr. Carrington, and have no animus against him. I am simply relating facts and commenting upon his obscure proceedings as related by himself in the Annals of Psychical Science, July, September, 1910, an English journal for which he is the agent in America. After waiting 1 year and a quarter after his investigation, Mr. Carrington published a long article in the above journal, accusing the Bangs sisters of fraud. I do not know if this article was verbatim the same as his report to Dr. Funk, but the latter did not see it till April, 1911, and disapproved of its publication. As it was published in an English journal, the Bangs sisters knew nothing of this scurrilous production. I was the first to inform them of it, in January, 1911. The plan of the room given in the article is wrong. The window and the doors are in the wrong place, the table is the wrong size, and put in a place where it has never stood. But, if placed elsewhere, it would not agree with the text of the article. One oar is drawn on the plan where there is, in reality, a fixed washstand. There is no furniture in the room, according to the plan. The fact is, it is full of furniture. In his article, Mr. Carrington says he gave false names. This, if he was ever there, would ensure either bad results or none at all. At first, I thought this might be the explanation, but I had to drop this theory for one less flattering to the writer. The false plan suggests that he has never been inside the house at all, and this explanation is supported by the Bangs sisters, and by the fact of his inability to correct his mistakes in the correspondence below. I am bound to say that I hesitate to state positively that a man, hitherto considered honest by those who have associated with him, could be guilty of writing a report of a séance when he had never been inside the house, but we must not forget that B had to send a report of some sort to Dr. Funk, who had paid for his trip. The fact of his having published this libel, without giving his victims a chance of seeing it, is against him. A man who could play this trick upon two women, be they duchesses, seamstresses, or mediums, is unworthy of the attention of fair-minded people. However, I would fain believe that, owing to so long a time having elapsed, Mr. Carrington's fault, the Bangs sisters may possibly have forgotten what sitters they received on a certain date. Their clients run up to quite 1,000 a year. Let us try and credit that he did go into the séance room. Now, What is the alternative?